There are hundreds of nonprofit organizations right here in Washtenaw County doing good for our community every single day. So we endeavor to shine the spotlight on those great groups, helping them tell their stories and saluting the good deeds they do for others. I'm Lucy Ann Lance, and this is the soul of our community. This is Community Cares.
Community Cares is brought to you in part by A&H Lawn Service of Saline, who says, love where you live. Find out more at anhlawncare.com.
The Bentley Historical Library collects the materials for and promotes the study of the histories of two great intertwined institutions, the State of Michigan and the University of Michigan. The library is open without fee to the public and welcomes researchers regardless of academic or professional affiliation. The Bentley has some 11,000 research collections. So what are those and why are they so important? I'm Lucy Ann Lance and this is Community Cares. Joining me is Dr. Alexis Antrocoli. She is the director of the Bentley Historical Library. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
You started as a student at the Bentley?
I did start as a student at the Bentley. I came here. I was a career changer, and I came here in 2009, and I knew I needed to get a job and build experience in the field. And so I reached out to the then curator of the Michigan Historical Collections, Tom Powers, and he says that he hired me because I was so enthusiastic. And that's where I got my start, was in the processing room at the Bentley working for Tom Powers.
Did you know back then that one day you would be the head of this marvelous institution?
If you had told me that in 2009, I wouldn't have believed you.
Has the Bentley changed greatly since those days, in your estimation?
In some ways, it's changed a lot.
How
and
so?
Some of that has to do with technology and the way our work happens behind the scenes or the way we provide access to collections. So a good example is when I started, if you wanted a to see some material in the collection, you had to fill out a paper call slip, we called it. So you filled out the information about what materials you wanted, and you handed it to a reference archivist, and they went and brought it out to you. And now we have an online system. So you can just go online, you can search through all our collection guides. We call them finding aids. It's a bit of a strange word, but you can search across everything we have. And then just like you would on an e-commerce site, you can select what you want and put in your request. And when you come into the library, you just tell the folks running the reading room, I put in some requests, I'd like to start with this box, and they bring it out to
you. Oh, wow.
So like a real big, it's the same, we're providing the same service, but we're just doing it in a way that's really different and that I hope makes patrons' lives and researchers' lives easier because they can do all that prep at home.
Talking with Dr. Alexis Antrocoli. Dr. Antrocoli, describe the Bentley in its entirety. If someone has never been there before, where is it located? What is it like?
Well, we're on the North Campus of the University of Michigan on Beale Avenue, right next to the Gerald R. Ford Library, if you know where that is, and pretty close to the VA. Most people know where the VA is, so I often use that as a marker. The building was built in 1972. The collections moved in 1973. We're open 5 days a week. We are open from 9:30 to 4:30 on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. We're open from 9:30 to 6:30 on Wednesdays. And we're open from 9:30 to 1:30 on Saturday mornings.
And this is for anyone to use?
This is anyone. You don't even have to have a reason to come see our stuff. You can just decide you want to come see some cool stuff about university history or Michigan history. And all we ask is that you register so that you have an account and can request materials and that you follow the rules of the reading room, because the materials are unique and we want them to last for as long as they possibly can. But other than that, You don't need any credential. You don't need any special reason. You can just come in and look at stuff.
Where did the idea come from? How did the Bentley start?
Oh, the Bentley was the brainchild of a UM faculty member in the 1930s, Louis Vanderveld, and he was a history professor. And he saw that Michigan history wasn't real. There was really no place at that time that was collecting Michigan history. And so he got some internal funding from the university, a small grant, and he started what was called then the Michigan Historical Collections. And from the beginning, it collected the history of the university and the history of the state.
Surprising that it took that long, 1935, when you look at the history of the University of Michigan, for that to happen.
For that to happen, right. And it's so there were other, I mean, the university library had been collecting unique materials. The Clements Library had been established about a decade before the Bentley and collects an American early American history more broadly. You had museums, but there was just no focus on Michigan history. And he felt really passionately that it was important to have that the university should be doing the work of collecting and providing access to Michigan history.
And yet it was not named after Vanderveld. It was named after Alvin M. Bentley.
Yes, in the 70s. So it was called the library until it moved to its current location in 73, was called the Michigan Historical Collections. And it only became the Bentley Historical Library because Alvin Bentley's widow, Arvella, gave the largest gift to build that library, and she wanted to name it in his honor.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. And Alvin Bentley was a former regent and U.S. Yes. congressman. So who utilizes the Bentley most? How is it used?
It is used in so many different ways. And I would say, I haven't looked at the exact numbers, but we do not serve primarily the way a lot of university research libraries do, only students and faculty of the university. At least half of our researchers are completely unaffiliated with the university. They're people researching their family histories. They're journalists coming in to do investigative work. They're people researching the history of their town. We also, of course, have students who come in and use the collections, and there are classes that we have there. There are faculty who do research there, both from the university and from other research institutions. But I would say at least half of our researchers are not academic researchers. They're people who are doing archival research for really a variety of reasons, a lot of them personal.
Give us an idea of what these collections look like. What would we find there? What mysteries could be unraveled?
Oh, you know, I have a colleague who loves this one collection we have that has all this information about a UFO sighting in Dexter from the 1960s in it. So really all kinds of things. I mean, we have everything from early Michigan history dating back to the territorial period. Original documents.
Like what?
In fact, we just got last month from a local historical society in Michigan found two Lewis Cass letters to the first governor of Michigan, Stevens T. Mason, in their collection. And they thought because they were letters to Mason and we had the governor's papers, Governor Mason's papers, that we should have those letters. So they brought them to us. And that's like a very new thing that we have. But we also have records of the Campeau family, which was one of the founding families of Detroit.
Oh, right.
In the collection. We have a lot of records of early Michigan, like senators and governors. We have records related to the Ferry family, which was one of the families that first settled on Mackinac Island.
Oh.
And one of their descendants actually became a U.S. senator. And one of the amazing things I found, I was going through his collection for something, and I was just going through a folder, and I found a Susan B. Anthony letter. He was a supporter of women's suffrage, and it was a letter from Susan B. Anthony inviting Senator Ferry of Michigan to Lucretia Mott's memorial service.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I didn't expect to find it there. So you do find these things.
How do you authenticate these pieces when you receive them and preserve them then for all eternity?
Right. So we, most of our collections come through donation. So unlike some libraries, we really don't buy very much at all. That's not how we acquire things. So we are talking with donors about these materials. A lot of them come from the family, right? So we know like that these are the record, like this family is giving us their records. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it, or the organization. So we collect lots of modern records too. We have the records of Governor Snyder, for example, and those are almost all digital. And so how do we acquire those? Where we were the team at the time, this was before I returned, worked with him and his staff to get those materials to the library. So it's really about building that relationship with the donor, understanding how they got the material, to be able to know whether or not they're what they say they are.
And when they are paper materials, that mm-hmm. preservation, is that part of what you have to do as well?
Yes. So once the material, the paper material, comes to the library, it goes through a process that we call processing, but it's really cataloging. So there are archivists who go through that material and understand what's there and describe it. And what we call a finding aid, but it's essentially a catalog record for an archival collection. They create that, and then that goes into an online system. But they also do things like they rehouse materials in better folders and boxes. They make sure that it's, you know, we have to do climate control in our storage areas so that it's the right temperature for paper materials so they last. They don't get, it's not too wet, they don't get moldy, it's not too dry, they don't get brittle. But then we also have a lot of AV materials, so old film and audio files. And for those materials, they require a little bit of a different environment. So we have cold rooms, right, that are kept very cold and a little more humid, right, to preserve that kind of
And photos
content.
As well? You have
and
photos?
And photos as well. We have lots of photos. Everything from postcards to family photos to the university's news service collection has lots of photos in it.
How has history maybe been revisited or changed because of discoveries that come into the Bentley?
Oh, that's a great question.
In other words, you get a piece in, and all of a sudden you're looking at this and you're saying, that's not how we understood the early days of the university or the state of Michigan. This now has added another piece to it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's rare that we get one piece that totally alters something, but it's often that people are looking at things in new ways or paying attention to records in ways that they hadn't before. So, for example, one of the things we're doing in the fall is we're going to be opening at the Frankel Detroit Observatory, which is part of the Bentley. It's our sort of, it's on the medical campus, and it's a little bit of our outreach arm. They're going to be doing an exhibit open to the public, free, on the Civil War in the University of Michigan.
Oh.
And they're going to be looking at the untold stories and the home front. Is going to be a huge part of the exhibit. So, for example, women, right, and the Civil War in Ann Arbor and at the University
their
of
role.
Michigan, and their role, and you know how they were involved in the Civil War, what their experience was, and that really requires kind of just looking at the collection in a new way, or maybe paying attention to different parts of the
collection. So it expands what we know about history.
It expands what we know and how we understand it. Or sometimes we find things that it's not that we didn't know we had them, but we've forgotten that we had them. Mm. So one of the things I found recently was the narrative of a man, an African-American man, who was born free in the state of Maryland, but was twice captured by slave catchers in the antebellum period and escaped. and made his way to Indiana and then Cass County, Michigan. And we have his first person narrative in the library. And it's just, we just had kind of not noticed it. And so we're going to be doing a story on that in our magazine next year.
Dr. Alexis Antrocoli, she is the director of the Bentley Historical Library on the campus of the University of Michigan. For more information, visit bentley.umich.edu. bentley.umich.edu. You're listening to Community Cares. I'm Lucianne Lance.
At A&H Lawn Service, their motto is love where you live, a way of doing business and also being involved in the community. Tim Austin, Brandon Hertel, and the staff at A&H are proud to support local charities like Celine Social Services, the Chad Tuff Foundation, Celine's Holiday Parade, and also beautifying downtown Celine, planting and caring for flower boxes along Michigan Avenue. Visit ahlawncare.com and the Love Where You Live page and see how you can get involved.
Suggest a nonprofit for Community Cares by emailing lucyannlance at cumulus.com.
A report from the White House accuses the Smithsonian Institution, the world's largest museum, education, and research complex, of engaging in extreme political activism, presenting a radical view of American history, specifically the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, accusing the leadership there of exhibiting anti-white activism and no longer treating the American story as a shared national inheritance to be celebrated. Dr. Alexis Antrocoli, director of the Bentley Historical Library at the U of M, how do we detail history accurately without marginalizing or denigrating America and its people?
I don't think of the work we do as being political work. I think that our work is educational work, and it's about telling a variety of stories to about the history of Michigan and the history of the university. And people are going to engage in different ways with those. They will sometimes agree with an interpretation that we make in an exhibit, and sometimes they won't. But the other thing I would say is we're drawing on the materials. It's all based in the materials. We're not creating this whole cloth.
There
we're
they are.
Taking content that was created by people 50, 100, 200 years ago, and we're presenting that to the public when we do that work.
We're talking about the Bentley Historical Library, the campus archive for the University of Michigan. It is located on the University of Michigan's North Campus in Ann Arbor, established in 1935 by the Regents of the University of Michigan. But it was the idea of that one professor who thought it was so important. And its mission is to serve as the official archives of the university and to document the history of the state of Michigan, as well as the activities of its people, organizations, and voluntary associations. And our guest is Dr. Alexis Antrocoli. You have an academic background in American history with extensive experience in archival and library policy creation, digital curation programs, manuscript acquisition. Tell me more about your career path.
Oh, goodness. So I went to graduate school in history right after my undergrad, and I got a PhD in American history from Brandeis. I then went and I taught for 3 years at a small college in western Pennsylvania, and I really realized that traditional academia wasn't really a good fit for me. I really like working with people a lot, and I realized that libraries might be a better fit. So I really started, and I'd worked in my own college's archives as a student, and I'd done a lot of research in archives, and I found myself becoming interested, for example, in like why they had what they had or why they made decisions about what to keep or not keep during the course of my work as a historian. And so after a lot of thought and talking to a lot of folks, I decided to switch career paths. And I came here to the University of Michigan to get a degree, Master of Science in Information with a specialty in Archives and Records Management. As I worked as a student at the Bentley, and then my first job after I graduated was to process the papers of Governor Granholm. It was a project archivist position, a one-year term position, and so I processed her papers, and it was the first governor's papers to come to the Bentley that had a really large digital component. So I really got to put those skills in digital curation To work with that collection.
When those papers come, governors of the state of Michigan,
yeah.
Do they get to pick and choose, or is this the entire collection of their career in Lansing?
It is a process by which we are speaking with them about what records they have.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily want all of it. So, like, we are thinking about, like, what's going to be valuable to researchers in the future. So that's a great question because here's the thing. We can't take everything. And people, like, sometimes don't realize this. So we have to decide, well, what's going to be the most valuable stuff? So we take campaign materials. We take public relations materials. We have, like, we are very interested in legislative files. So anything related to policy, that governor's policy. So the records of various advisors within that office, it's really the executive office of the governor who's the papers we're taking. There are legal records often. So, you know, at that level of government, there may be the state might be sued or the state might be suing, and there may be information about that or other, like, legal advice. Those are often very valuable to researchers. Of course, we have the records of the lieutenant governor come, as well as the records of the office of the first lady or first gentleman of the state and their work around the state.
It's easy to see why those records are all important. Are there lesser known people that we'd be surprised that you have a collection on or that you decided would be important to have, whether it's from political realm or even the university?
You know, that is an interesting question. I think that there are probably records that of people, and sometimes even people that we approach don't think that are surprised that we want their records because they're not thinking of their work in that way. But, you know, something like one of the collections we have dates back pretty far is the Interfaith Council on Peace and Justice here in Ann Arbor.
Right, started here.
Yeah. Started here, which is, I think, a thing that people, you know, might not think about being in the archives, but it's this community organization. They've been doing that work here for a very long time. It documents the history of activism in the community.
It really does. I remember when they first started here.
But another example is that we have records related to you know, far-right militia movements in Michigan.
You do?
Right, yes. So we have records of the Michigan militia in the library. And so it really, we have the records of iterations of the Communist Party in Michigan. We really, it is very, the scope of what we collect is extraordinarily broad because our job is really to document the history of the state. And that means having an open mind and not using what no matter what it might be, setting any personal biases we have aside to say this is happening in Michigan. This is an organization that or a person or a community that's important to understanding our state, right? And our job is to preserve it so that people can access it and find ways to better understand the state and the university as a whole.
Dr. Antrocoli, you have been called the perfect steward of the Bentley. How does the enormity of your role play into your decision-making at the Bentley?
You know, I really see myself in a lot of ways. I think a lot about leadership and my approach to it. And a lot of my approaches, I see myself as a facilitator and a person whose job it is to build other leaders and give people to empower other people to do their work. Because I think I was a student and my first job was at the Bentley and I benefited so much from that in terms of my career. I also see it as part of my role to steward the Bentley's role in educating and supporting the next generation of folks who go out and preserve history. We have lots of students at the university who work at the Bentley, and I'm really committed to providing them absolutely the best possible experience and to getting their careers on the right track, regardless of whether they'll ever work at the Bentley, because I think it's so core to our mission.
Is there one item there that is very special to you?
I don't know if there's an item, but there's a collection that I really love.
Which is?
Which is the Elizabeth Margaret Chandler papers. Elizabeth Margaret Chandler was, she died very young in her 30s, in the 1830s. And maybe late 1820s, might be getting the dates wrong. But she was a young woman, Quaker woman, born in Philadelphia, who was a very early abolitionist. And edited the women's section of one of the oldest abolitionist newspapers in the country. And she had an aunt and uncle who moved here to Michigan in the 1820s, and she followed them at a certain point. And she has a book that she wrote. She was a poet, a published poet. She was very famous in her day, and because she lived in Michigan and a lot of her work happened while she was in Michigan, it was a collection that came to the Bentley as a set of family papers, and it just has incredible documentation of the early abolitionist movement in this country. And, you know, there was a lot of that activity in Michigan at the time and in Quaker communities. I just think it's fascinating.
Do you learn, you know, that time period, 1830s, 1820s, do you get a sense then of how someone is developed to be an abolitionist in those early days, especially a woman?
Yeah. I mean, I think for this young woman, I think partly she was a precocious young woman. She was well-educated. She came from a family of some means, and she was Quaker. And the Quakers were one of the first groups to become primarily abolitionists, mm-hmm. dating back into the 18th century. And so I think it was probably her education and her religious background and just her own talent and curiosity that led her to this place of doing this.
And what can we learn
work.
From studying lives like hers?
You know, what I would say is that what I take away from it is here is a person who took on a challenge and at a time when women, right, didn't have a lot of opportunities. And when something like the end of slavery seemed really maybe impossible, right? But she didn't let that stop, either of those things stop her. And I think that kind of commitment to justice and that kind of idealism and hope, right? Hope for the future is something that we can take away from a collection like that.
Dr. Alexis Antrocoli, the director of the Bentley Historical Library on Community Cares. The Bentley is the official archive of the University of Michigan and also holds many papers, photos, maps, and more about the history of Michigan as a state. Visiting is free, and you can also go online and learn more. You can visit bentley.umich.edu and in Ann Arbor, located on Beale Avenue on the North Campus of the University of Michigan. I'm Lucianne Lance, and this is Community Cares.
At A&H Lawn Service, their motto is love where you live, a way of doing business and also being involved in the community. Tim Austin, Brandon Hertel, and the staff at A&H are proud to support local charities like Celine Social Services, the Chad Tuff Foundation, Celine's Holiday Parade, and also beautifying downtown Celine, planting and caring for flower boxes along Michigan Avenue. Visit ahlawncare.com and the Love Where You Live page and see how you can get involved.
Smokey the Bear.
Smokey. Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
Use what you desire, don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com and remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Suggest a nonprofit for Community Cares by emailing lucyannlance@cumulus.com.
Community Cares, endeavoring to make a difference in our community by supporting nonprofit organizations that make Washtenaw County a great place to live. I'm Lucy Ann Lance.